Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap. So a big welcome from sunny Malta.
Yeah, thanks, Paul, and hello to everyone. Got my usual Zoom shirt on. I always wear this shirt for everything.
Yeah, look very sharp in that, mate. That's no problems there at all. Anyway, since we've had lots of corporate news, plus we've managed to sort of like touch base with three management teams this week, we thought we might as well just dive straight into some actual stocks. And we've got Dave asking about four Imprint that is a direct marketeer, I think, of promotional products. Came out with was it results or trading update yesterday? Anyway, the shares responded pretty positive. We got any thoughts on it at all?
Yeah, this was a holding of mine. I've actually sold them, and I explained why in the reader comments actually on Tuesday and Tuesday's Substack. My initial reaction to the RNS was really good. It was ahead of expectations. Very encouraging. So pre-market open, I flagged up, look, the shares should go up today. So I thought it might rise about 5%, because that was how Edison upgraded the 2025 forecast by 5%. Anyway, the shares went up about 18%, which struck me as, I thought, that's a bit funny. Then, I still like the share. But then a note from Edison came through late morning, which really took the steam out of it for me, because Edison basically said that the increased tariff costs, because before Imprint operates almost entirely in the USA, it said those had just been deferred. And it used the phrase when, not if. So basically, it's still forecasting a drop in earnings in 2026. It's just been deferred. So I think the market's got this wrong, actually, in taking the shares up about 20%. So I ditched them. I did originally top slice the holding to bank some, not profits, but recoup losses. But then, as I say, the Edison note rattled me. So I think that is the key bitter, and of course it's free. So I urge readers and holders for Imprint to check out the Edison note, because it does put quite a dampener on things, I feel. But there again, maybe they're setting it low for 2026 and it's going to beat. I think it is fundamentally a very good business actually for Imprint. So you could argue it either way, but I've got a funny feeling it might drift back down again. So I'll revisit it at sort of 35 quid or below, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right, actually, because I mean, it doesn't, current share price, looking at next year's earnings, it trades at 11 times EBITDA, which for a really I know it's a very good sort of distributor and marketeer of promotional products to businesses, but unless we see a huge jump in economic cycle and a lot of increase in marketing spend by corporates, I'm with you. The fundamentals probably don't justify that rating unless you're going to see a lot of EPS growth, profitability come through.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what is it in real money? So the PE ratio. Oh, 14.4 times, so which is probably about the right price, isn't it? So I think what the bulls are going to say about this is that, oh, they're setting the bar low and they'll smash the forecast. In which case, if you think that, which is a perfectly valid point of view, because it is a quality business, it would be worth holding. And also, of course, you get very good divvies with Fort Imprint, and it tends to pay out large special divvies. So including the special, I think the yield was about 10% last year or something. So, you know, it's a good business, don't get me wrong, but I just felt I needed to prune something in my portfolio. And I thought, given an 18% spike up, looks a bit overdone, I just decided to take my money off the table. But I do still like the company, and I'll go back in, as I say, if I get a more attractive price in future. So sorry for the slightly mixed messaging yesterday to the readers, but it was purely because the Edison note changed the outlook quite considerably, actually.
Good. Okay, let's move on. We've got Andrew. He's asking about FDM, which basically also had a trading update or a set of results. Yes, a bit of another one with a relief rally. I think it was in line, but anyway, the shares popped up sort of 10%.
Yeah, do you know what they've done today? I haven't tracked that one today.
Yeah, they're up about 3%. I mean, just to let everybody know, they've effectively trained graduates in IT services that they then hire out to corporates around the world. And clearly, as everybody knows, the IT, the particularly initial entry jobs into corporates for IT, has been hit hard by AI because it's taken that entry-level job out and hit them. But they did actually start seeing a bit of sort of like green shoots, so they thought.
Oh, you've stolen the phrase from me. I was going to use that. Yeah, we take the same view. We looked at this yesterday. My colleague Dave did a write-up on it. And, I mean, if you zoom out on the chart, Paul, further back, you'll see it's just been an absolute disaster. I think it's over 90. Yeah, there we are. Yeah. Over 90% downs, which is not a cyclical downturn, is it? That is saying something has structurally gone badly wrong, which I think you're right. It sounds like it's entry-level jobs being done by AI more, perhaps. We took the view that there's slight, maybe early signs of a possible turnaround there. I think they said they've actually started to slightly increase their recruitment of new trainees. Well, they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't expect at least some sort of upturn to come. The other good thing about FDM is it's got a lovely balance sheet. I think around about a third of the market cap is company's own net cash, so not timing differences. So you've got a bulletproof balance sheet. It's owner-managed, and you've got a forecast 7% dividend yield. So this could be a turning point. I mean, I must admit, I was tempted to have a little nibble on it myself just for a possible turnaround. But you have to weigh that up with the fact that it could be just a structurally, permanently declining business that's a value trap. So which way are you leaning then, Paul?
Well, I want to know what the USPs are of this business. I mean, okay, it trains graduates, but frankly, is that what it, I mean, what do you see as a USP for this business?
I'm not sure. I mean, it calls them Mounties, doesn't it? And they're sort of lightly trained, I think we could probably best say.
Yeah.
Just sort of entry level IT people. So it's really like it's a staffing company effectively that does in house training. Has it had its day? Possibly. I don't know. It's a tricky one. I honestly don't know what the long term outlook is, but the value metrics are certainly looking attractive for a bounce. If I was going to buy some of these, it's the sort of thing I'd buy for maybe a 50% bounce.
Yeah,
that more a trade than not immediately, maybe over a year or two, and then you monitor the events, don't you? If the news flow shows us a stronger recovery coming, you add to the position. You know, it's that sort of thing, more a trade than as with so many business models right now, Paul. Mm-hmm. Who knows what the business, what the long term view for the business model actually is. Everything's changing so quick, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, if anybody knows what the USP is for FDM, please put them into the chat box and I'll read it out, because I'm scratching my head. I think it's just basically a body shop that trains graduates in IT skills and pushes them out.
Yeah, it is. Apparently it's the 2 and 3 years graduates who make the money. So the new people that it has to train up initially, they have quite low charge out rates, I think. So you won't see necessarily an upturn in profitability in the first year of recovery. That's the other slightly negative thing. But potentially interesting because of that lovely balance sheet. You know, you don't have to worry. I mean, how many more profit warnings can come out when you see a chart like that that's down over 90%? You know, you think it can't be much more bad news, surely.
Okay, right. Let's go to scientific instrumentation. We had another one came with a relief rally. Oxford Instruments, who had a disaster. They basically do really high sophisticated instrumentation that goes into imaging, which goes into healthcare, and it goes into all kinds of scientific and R&D. That got slammed when the tariffs came in Q1. Their advanced technology division did well because it supplies compound semiconductors, which go into things like data centers and defense. It's high performance semiconductors.
What day was it, Paul? Sorry to interrupt.
I think it was Tuesday. Was it Tuesday, Oxford? Jonathan's asking. Or Monday. Anyway, it's Oxford Instruments. Anyway, they came out and they said that Q1 was slow. Q2 then started getting better, and they now start seeing a bounce in H2. I was just wondering, what's your view on this one? Because the shares have rallied about a good 10-15%, actually.
Yeah, it was. I found my notes on it now. It went up 11% on Tuesday. That was an intraday price. We are just neutral on this, Amber, in our scoring system. It's about $1 billion market cap, so quite a substantial business. Yeah, here we are. It was H1 results to September 25, challenging Q1. Yeah, you're right. But then for the financial year, March 26, it says no change to expectations. So that sounds... well, that's in line, isn't it? So yeah. I'm not quite sure what made it. My notes don't really cover what caused it to bounce 11%. I'm not sure on that.
It was basically improving momentum, though, because they had a disaster in the Q1 because everybody stopped buying ahead of that Liberation Day tariffs and hit on R&D. It then started to come back in Q2, and so the momentum shifted. And okay. I think what the market is saying is that we're now back on the road in terms of high performance instrumentation, and it was that imaging division that they've taken out cost and are seeing demands and see operating leverage. So it's basically, was it just a temporary pause, which the market's interpreted, and now it's going to go? And then you look at it in terms of Spectris, which just got taken out by KKR on a ridiculously high EBITDA multiple. And people are saying, I've seen this movie before. Is this coming again?
Yeah. I mean, looking back at my notes on my other screen here, I was much more positive on it in April and June. We looked at it three times and we reported on it positively. So I think one of my teams has slipped through a downgrade to Amber without me noticing here.
Okay, well, he could do that. I'm sure he's a bright guy.
Oh yeah, they're very bright. Yeah, I mean, I think this one's potentially interesting actually, but yeah. I don't know the business that well. And as you say, current forward PE is nearly 22 times. But it's got a sound balance sheet though. Pretty much debt-free balance sheet. So, yeah, worth a look if you understand the sector, I would say.
Yeah. I'll tell you, here's a prediction for next year. First one of the year. First one coming into Christmas, okay? The owners of Spectris, KKR, put a bid on Oxford Instruments to effectively, because Spectris wanted to buy them originally about 3 years ago. There you go.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Okay, that's definitely a speculative guess. But anyway, I'm sure... It's got to be one of the hottest takeover targets around, given what's happened to Spectris. Okay, let's move base. We've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about Avingtrans, they're one of their medical subsidiaries, Adaptix, got FDA approval for their new 3D X-ray device, and the shares are currently trading at about just over £5. I know Singers and I think it's Cavendish also have an estimate for their engineering business of £6, and then they've got effectively, so it means the medical business is for free. And so consequently, if they've just got FDA approval, it's definitely worth more than zero, that's for sure. So the shares responded positively. What's your take anyway on the business?
Well, FDA approval is always a nice thing to see on an RNS, isn't it? For sure. Mm. It can only help. We like this one. I was slow to the party I think you've explained it very well to me in the past on these chats, actually, how we should go about valuing it. And it came through in the last set of figures. I can't remember where it was, but it was maybe a month or two ago. And that was when I could actually see in the numbers, I see what they're on about now. Mm. You and some other investors had done the clever bit of anticipating the improvement. But here we are. So I upped it from amber to amber green, which is 3-star to 4-star on the 24th of September, because that was when its May 25 results came through. And everything that you said would happen has happened. So, the valuation can now be justified. There was a big increase in the Cavendish forecast as well for May 26, wasn't there? They were up to about 17%. So it stacks up nicely on just a conventional PE basis now, which of course is what I look for, being very old-fashioned value style investor. You do all the clever stuff, you and the Harwood guys and everybody. But
the PE multiple goes to your shirt there, Paul. Chris.
I think it's good. I like having trends. We're positive on it. We're staying positive. Yeah, it looks a very interesting company. I think management here are very highly regarded. I hear that from lots of people.
I mean, I'll just point out, Paul, in terms of the valuation, the engineering business trades at about 9x, and typically these go for these kind of high quality regulated, sort of industry niche engineers go for sort of 12 to 13 times on an acquisition.
So
EBITDA, and therefore the medical division currently is in there for free. And I've got another prediction in 2027. They've just recruited a new guy to head up their medical division, a guy called Stuart Gall, who was the CEO of Intelligent Ultrasound, who sold that business to, I think it was private equity company, who wanted to do a roll-up in that particular space. So he's now joined Avingtrans to basically look after their medical division. And I could see in 2027, once the second part of their medical division, which is their Magnetica division, their 3D MRI, gets approval from the FDA, I think they'll actually look to list this. They'll actually do to spin it off separately.
Oh, spin it off, sell
it. So 2027, could be a big moment for a significant re-rate, or as soon as they indicate that split's happening. But at the moment, it's too early, I think.
Okay, and I note as well, the largest shareholder in Avingtrans is our friends at Harwood Capital, with 11.6%. You've also got, obviously, the usual name institutions. Management, the chairman's got 4.3%. Other directors all have quite meaningful stakes. So that is encouraging. You've got a degree of, a decent amount of skin in the game for management. No, I think it looks good, Avingtrans. Yeah.
Okay, let's switch sectors. We've got Andrew. He's asking about Traxys, which is effectively a hardware software company in the rail sector, got hit by CP7 and the introduction of the Great British Train Line or railways by the government. So they've had a slowdown in that whole sector, both in the UK for their remote control monitoring and out in the States as well. The shares have really come back hard. What's your view?
Well, we're waiting on news. I have a feeling they're due to put results out in the next few days, I believe, because I think I've been offered a call with management.
Great. That is really good knowledge to have, that is, as a light, to let everybody else know that they're, because it explains why the shares are coming down.
What, because I'm going to talk to them?
No. I think people ahead of the news are moving that shares. That's really, really useful.
Well, I don't know. I'd need to double check that. I mean, we had the last news I've got from Traxys was 27th of August, a trading update. That was their July full year trading update, which was in line. So, the outlook comments are a bit wobbly. It said market headwinds expected to persist So, yeah, but it's, the shares have come down a lot, haven't they? They did that big move up. But you and I both caught that, actually, and we thankfully we sold. It's come all the way back down again. So are you tempted to load back up, Paul, now that we're getting
not until you speak to them, to be honest, because they've got this they've got the new guy in who's, I'm sure, is excellent, a guy called David Frost, not the newsreader or the guy who used to do the interviews. But this says to me, they're going to actually they may that outlook for FY26 may be brought down. I don't know. I would not be jumping the gun on this, but it is, to answer the question, yes, it is very interesting. And at these current levels, it trades at about 11 times PE with masses of cash on the balance sheet, just over 5.5 times EBITDA. I mean, this is wrongly priced. If they maintain their estimates next week for this will rally hard and up, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, as we saw last time, look at that sort of it was just a 1 week thing. It went from about £3 to about £4.50, didn't it? So you've got to be in it to win it with this one. Traxys, and the last 23 million net cash at July, and the market cap's only 90 million. So it is a quality company. It seems to have the main, I think the core business is the UK rail software business, isn't it? Which is so complex, and there's not really much competition because it has decades worth of funnies in it relating to union agreements and all sorts of other things that I believe that revenue is very sticky. But I haven't really got any predictions on what the outlook might be, but when you see things drifting like that ahead of his results, you do more often than not, it's not, it's likely to be a disappointment, isn't it?
Yeah. Who knows? But if it isn't, it'll rally hard because it's mispriced on those estimates. The valuation is too low.
I agree. But some of the other bits in the business are not great. I think like the traffic monitoring thing, they've got a parking thing, haven't they? So they've got a couple of odd bits in there that maybe don't add value. So maybe just having a cull of the low quality subsidiaries might then lead to it being re-rated, maybe for smaller but higher quality. So I think it's definitely one that we'll be scrutinizing the figures when they come out. But as you quite rightly say, very tightly held, very illiquid. So if you do like it and the results are good, you won't be able to buy any.
Yeah, true. Okay, good. HJ Harani says a nice hairdo, Mr. Scott. So
thanks, HJ.
It matches your shirt. And we've got John Clark. He's asking about ME International Group, which has got the photo booth business and then the automatic laundry. Sort of washing machines. And I think they're under a sale process, I believe, at the moment. Isn't the washing machine doing really well? And the photo booth business sort of flat, and particularly in the Germany, I seem to remember that they change the regulations that you've got to actually have your passport photographs in government offices now. You can't use photo booths.
Level of granularity. What day was it, Paul? Sorry, I need the day with these.
I don't think it is recently, actually. No.
We had something this week. Yeah, I remember it was late last week, maybe, was it?
Okay. Apologies, I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's coming back to me, Paul. Yeah, it was last week. It was a 5% miss, which they were a bit naughty. They tried to sort of finesse it away. Yeah, here we are, 7th of November. They didn't directly say we've missed. This was the trading update for October 25. That was it, like late last week. And the shares have fallen a lot.
They
really have. I think this is coming into buying range. I have to say, it's a very good business. The laundry business sounds uninteresting, but it's really good. It's generating very good return on equity. They're rolling out these laundry machines rapidly. They're put in very low rent locations. So think car parks, think petrol forecourts. Why do people use a laundry in a petrol forecourt? Because they're visiting. They may be staying in a hotel, contractors who are working somewhere and need to, and it's in a convenient location. It's good modern equipment, all the rest of it. And there's usually a McDonald's nearby or something where you can wait. It's a very good product and very profitable. And anyway, you're now being offered these shares on a forward PE of about 12. You've got a good dividend yield, I think. I haven't got the numbers in front of me. I don't know if you have, Paul, for dividend yield.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it?
It is. I've got around about 5%, just over.
5%, yeah. And it's, you see, it's self-funding, it's expansion CapEx, as well as paying that 5% dividend, and it's got a net cash balance sheet. Gosh, the forward PE is down to 10.8.
Yes.
I would be very tempted to pick up a few of those. I think that's very good. Now, the sale process, it is owner-managed by, is it Sergey, I think?
Who owns, yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I've heard various rumours about why, you know, people are speculating, if you like, over why an offer period started quite some time ago. I think it was in the summer. And I've heard rumours it's sort of maybe another insider who wants to exit or whatever. And it could end up being bought out by the founder who had to launch a bid. It was very strange a couple of years ago because he seems to have accidentally gone over the 30% threshold and actually had to launch a bid. Very, very peculiar that was. But anyway, whichever way you slice and dice it, this thing's cheap, I think. Mm. And it's a good... it's a good growth company priced like a value share. But you, as you do point out, though, Paul, there could be glitches in future over the photo booth side of things. Mm. Some people say, oh, it's linking up with biometric testing directly to passport offices, which is good. And some people are saying that they're pulling away from allowing people to submit their own iPhone photos and whatnot because they can be doctored, you know, whereas you couldn't doctor it in a photo booth. So I don't know. I don't know what happens with the photo bit. It's very geographically concentrated. Isn't it France and Japan being the biggest markets, I think?
Right.
Not sure. But anyway, bottom. I'll wrap this up because I think the shares are cheap. So I think it's a good buying opportunity.
Yeah. So you think it's a value play?
Value play. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Cool. Okay, good. Let's move to Adam. He's asking about a company that we actually talked to this week or on Monday, I think, MJ Gleeson, the affordable house builder in the north, basically in the north and the Midlands, and they've got a land development division in the south. We had a fascinating conversation
with
CEO Graham Protheroe and Stefan Allison. Do you want to give us your thoughts on the business?
Oh, well, it was fantastic. Such an interesting Zoom, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. I felt guilty that a couple of Muppets like us took up an hour and a quarter of their time when they should have been running the business, really, you know. But they were very generous with their time, very straightforward. You know, all the answers we got were nuanced and just direct answers. It was a masterclass, really. Yeah. The main takeaways from it, I think, and you'll probably cover this, is that of all the house builders, it's got a really steep growth trajectory in the pipeline. Mm. They've got, you know, 10 years land bank, and they said, you know, we want to increase the number of sites by at least 50%. And increase the average selling price because they're going to bring in 4 and 5 bedroom houses, I think. So, if you're looking for something that could double in size or maybe even more, this is probably the only one of the listed house builders. It's cheap, if bulletproof balance sheet like all of them. The downside thing that took me a bit by surprise, well, not surprise, because as we mentioned in the RNSs, was this these cultural problems. He said something like, We've got sort of organizational management, internal management problems. He says, we're like a large, small house builder. And he said, what we need to become is a small, large house builder. And by that, he meant we need to put in place proper procedures, proper structures. We need to police what the individual sites are doing. But that sounded very basic to me. You know, surely they should have area managers that do all the compliance testing and check all these things. So it's slightly shambolic maybe internally.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't pick up that. I thought they basically dropped the ball in terms of their profit warning last year, hence they made changes. And I think the CEO, Graham, now is taking charge more with the area managers. And actually, I think, yes, they just need more rigorous discipline in terms of industrializing the site management process. And I think that they'll get that from putting some new, if they put some proper software, which they don't seem to have. But
I mean, he said He gave us an example, didn't he? Because we said, well, what sort of things go wrong? And he basically said somebody on the site will just make a decision on the fly to dump, you know, whatever, 50 tons of rubbish in one place. And then, you know, the water engineer who's come to connect up the waterworks will find a 50-ton pile of rubbish there. And everything stops for a fortnight. You know, he said it's things like that, which, again, to me, I mean, I'm sure it's fiendishly difficult building 100 house housing estate, but surely those sorts of things are just the basics, I would have thought. And the actually, the other thing that I thought was very interesting, the land division, which I've kind of always dismissed, the CFO actually, Stefan, talked us through that land division, and he was raving about it, saying it's a hidden gem, you know, it's one of the UK's top land development agencies, which take very little balance sheet risk, but which actually earn fees by sort of marrying everything together, vendors and buyers, planning, you know. And he said they're absolutely, you know, shit hot at doing this. He says they're the best in the UK, and you just get these big lumps of profit coming in randomly. So I said to them, look, why don't you, because of all these delays that happen, why don't you separate that land division out altogether and just have the forecast for the homes division only, you know, the broker forecast. And they seem to sort of think that was a reasonable point, didn't they? But anyway, over to you. What, any other points from you, Paul?
Yeah, I think it's just a bit of sort of home tidying up. I didn't get the same impression this was a major issue in terms of the build quality and all that. I think it's actually very good. I think their quality, if you look at their metrics in terms of where they are in the house builders, they're absolutely fine. And the thing is, they're in that hot spot, the sweet spot of affordable homes, which is where the government wanted to be. And I think the things which are stopping them growing is one, obviously, you know, the planning permissions is still taking a long time for them to get through the actual system. Two, I think they, you know, because the Help to Buy scheme, which helped, you know, first time buyers, was withdrawn in April this year. I think that slowed up a whole lot of the house builders. And so, and Taylor Wimpey said it again this morning, that we need to stimulate demand as well as remove some of the blockages. And once that happens, and I actually think you might see that occur in the budget, because I suspect they'll increase the council tax on graded G and H. No, graded G and H, the higher value homes, the mansion tax, double those, and use some of that money to, you know, stimulate first time buyers in affordable homes. And if they did that, I mean, when I asked him, and he said that will absolutely put a rocket underneath the business, that would be absolutely fab. I'm obviously own the shares. I'm very positive on it. I actually think at 30% discount to net tangible assets, I think they're in the right place. And I suspect the budget, even if they don't give anything in the budget away, what we do know is the uncertainty moving into the budget has slowed everybody down, and all the house builders, as long as it's not negative, as long as the house builders will, all of them will rally on no news at all. And if they do actually stimulate it and get rid of the, you know, the problems in the planning permission, and also for the bigger house builders, the building safety regulator, then I can see this one significantly moving ahead. And I think if any of the house builders, this is a really quite a safe one, because it hasn't got a problem on its cladding.
Yes, that's a good point. I agree with all of that. I think this is a time to be bold for investors. And I hope I don't end up with egg on my face on this, or people demanding compensation or something. But I do think it's a time to be bold, because you've got a lot of investors who've sold off these house building shares. They're all sort of waiting for the sword of Damocles to fall in the budget. But I think it could go the other way. Yeah. As you say, the budget could contain some good measures to actually stimulate the market. And, of course, interest rates are probably coming down a quarter point, although that doesn't directly feed through to mortgage rates. It's certainly helpful. And, planning. He said the planning departments at councils are so understaffed and have such big backlogs. He said it's a two-year-plus delay from that, and it's not going to be fixed overnight. But and also, they are having to give incentives to customers to actually sign on the dotted line. I've heard that about other house builders too. But I reckon these things, this whole sector is dirt cheap. If I had any spare cash, I'd probably buy a basket of three or four of them, including Gleason's.
Yeah.
And I think from this level, I think you could do well on those. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, good. We've got Stefan. He's asking about Hilton Food Group, which basically does... I think it's basically cuts of beef and pork and chicken and fish and stuff into sells it into supermarkets, probably own brand. The margins are very slim. Anyway, yeah. They came out with a big profit warning based on the price of beef going up, and they haven't been able to transfer that to their into their supermarkets, into the big grocers. And likewise, I think they've got a big smoked salmon facility, I think, in Turkey, and they've lost the export license to send it over to the US, which is one of their big. So they've had a double whammy. But anyway, what was your take? The shares have really fallen hard.
Yeah, we looked at this on Tuesday. This was a Q3 trading update, which it described as, quote, resilient. And I know there's some other commentators, Mark Simpson and Leo, who do an entertaining blog, and they referred to resilient as the R word because it's nearly always covering up bad news. Anyway, we worked out, John and my team looked at this pre-8 a.m. He said that the... it looked like a 5% profit miss for 12.25. So only 5%. But then the shares dropped 25%. But we then picked up that Shore Capital had reduced next year's forecast profit by minus 17%. So it just doesn't interest me in the slightest, Hilton Food. It's just such a low margin business. And if they can't even pass on price increases, then that's the worst of both worlds, isn't it? A low margin business that can't pass on the costs. Forget it. Just doesn't interest me at all. So no, just neutral on that one.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, it's very, very cheap, but it's cheap for a reason, I think.
Yes.
Just like, if you're selling commodity stuff into big supermarkets with huge pricing, you know, they've got huge pricing power in their suppliers, then that's a tough gig, that is.
It is. And it's got some debt as well. Not outrageous amounts of debt, but of course, when you've got profits declining and forecast declining, the debt becomes a bigger issue, doesn't it? So doesn't interest us in the least, I'm afraid.
Okay, we've got choosing sectors. We've gone into payments. We've got Simon Hollingsworth. He's asking about FinSetter, which basically is a small payments business that is run by a guy who James Hickman, who's ex Equals, and he's basically modeling the business on what Equals has done. They're growing in about low double digits this year, sort of top line. They've just got into EBITDA profitability. Haven't come out with any news other than they did actually get hit by some of the top line growth got slowed off a bit because of the disturbance with the tariffs, and therefore a lot of their high net worth individuals and SME customers decided not to buy expensive houses abroad in in the Middle East, and also companies decided not to do M&A. But they're still double digit top line growth. They've got a really low valuation. Anyway, what's your latest view on this one?
I can't find this one. Do we know what date it reported?
Do we know? I think it was September, actually.
Oh, yeah, I've got September. This was a profit warning on the 10th of September.
Yeah.
It dropped 21% to 17.5p, and it's carried on down. I think it's 13.9p, so only 8 million market cap. I can't really see the point in why this business exists. And I don't touch payments companies. So, no, not of any interest for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I would say, Simon, this is really, really cheap now. And it trades at about 0.6 times EV sales. When Equals got taken out, it was 2.4 times sales. And as I say, James Hickman is ex-Equals. He knows exactly what he's doing. It just needs to scale, get into profitability. And it's actually already cash neutral. I mean, it's not a problem on the cash. It actually is generating cash, or is cash neutral. And it's expanding abroad into to the Middle East, into Canada, and I think ultimately wants to go to Singapore as well. Has good sort of customers and uses, you know, channel partners and stuff. It's very, very, very cheap is for a payments business. And not surprisingly, I mean, you know, at 14p, Shore Capital, the broker, has a target price of 45. But with such a small company, it carries high reward, high risk.
Yeah, it could be interesting. I mean, the shares, it's gone, done a round trip, hasn't it? From, you know, the lows of about 5p three years ago, all the way, practically 10 bagged up to 44p. And it's now most of the way back down, isn't it? So yeah. the market's very much fallen out of love with Finseta, isn't it? But yeah. I think, yeah, definitely not of interest to me.
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got another question for a company that we spoke to. We've got Claire. She's asking about Ultimate Products, that basically does the Salter sort of scales and also the Beldray housing, sort of like household goods and stuff. We spoke to their CEO, Andrew Gossage, last week, and we had a really fascinating chat. Any thoughts on it at all?
Yeah, it was great, I thought. I mean, you sort of explained to him in detail your theory of what their strategy should be, but I'll let you come on to that. And he rather dryly retorted that every person from the city he talks to thinks there's an obvious and blindingly obvious and simple strategy they should pursue. Anyone who doesn't agree with them is an idiot. And he said, literally everyone has a different view.
So
that was quite funny. But I think this is quite a nice little business, actually. It's an importer, basically. Mm. I quite like the fact that they'll go after any product as long as they can make a margin on it. I think the opposite to you, really, but you can come on to that. They've obviously had the air fryer boom has finished now. I think it's just a basic owner-managed business that is cheap. This might be the new normal, the current level of profits. I suspect they had a bit of a bonanza from air fryers. I think Andy Gossage is very good. He remembered, actually, I interviewed him 5.5 years ago at the beginning of the pandemic, and he gave me a masterclass in how to handle freight, and you know, they're real experts on logistics and all the rest of it. I think it's a nice little business, actually, and I think it's undervalued at the moment. I could see 20-30% upside on this share, and I think you get reasonable divvies. So, that was it. The standout point I've asterisked here. He said, there's one thing, Paul, we think you're wrong about. And I said, what's that? He said, we do a lot more product development than you and your readers seem to think we do. I think he said half of their overheads are product development people. So he's saying, we don't just put a sticker on it, you know, on a Chinese product. He said, we're a lot more involved in the product development. And he said they like to be a fast second. Yes. So they don't want to be leading the market. They wait for the market leading products to come out, see what they've got wrong, and design a similar product, which is actually better than the original market leader. So I think they're smart guys. I like it. I think it's cheap. Yeah. Over to you, Paul.
No, I would agree with all of that. And I say their USP is that they're a fast follower of all of these sort of, like, you know, in vogue type of appliances. So their competitors, he was saying, they're against Shark Ninja, Dyson and GE appliances. Yes. So they're very good at sort of like copying it, but improving it and getting the next best, the next best thing. And I think they've got this really good sort of... There was something that he was talking about. Was it Slush Puppy or something? I can't remember. It was a device that he'd just done and was going absolutely hell for leather, was doing really well. So it underpins their USP, basically. They're very good at sort of like, you know, improving sort of like, is it the first products out there? And I said to him, strategy, when it comes from an investor perspective, concentrate. If you concentrated on Salter and Beldray, you've got your highest margins, your highest return on capital employed. You could do 80 million a turnover from 60 today. You'd be valued at, let's just take you on that basis, one time sales with 10 times return on capital employed. Sorry, 10 times return on sales. You get 80 million market cap. You then basically sell off the rest of the divisions to wipe out your actual debt. Nice. And the current market cap is only 54 million. So you go from 54 to 80 and you're not on a stretched valuation anyway, and you can redeploy that money. Now, that's when he laughed off his chair, didn't he? And he said, what you're talking about, Paul. But hey, that's how I would view it. I would say, like most FMCG businesses, concentrate on what you're good at. Set up your power products, your power, where your skill is, and concentrate and double down on what you're good at, and you'll get the best shareholder returns, would be my take anyway.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. And on the backdrop behind his camera, he had the logos of Salter and Beldray, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he said, look at the backdrop. He said, that's what we want to focus on, these two brands which add value and give higher margins. So you could be right. If they do focus more on those two brands, and who knows, maybe acquire one or two other additional brands. If they just focus on those, they could be, the shares could re-rate, couldn't they?
Yeah.
As more of a branded company than just a box shifting type company. So I think it's worth a look. It's not going to shoot the lights out, is it?
Yeah.
But you could argue these shares are 20 or 30% underpriced. And I'm pretty sure, do you know what the divvy is, Paul, on them? I think they're
quite good,
the divvies.
Yeah, just over 4%.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it? And you've got that lovely thing where it's owner managed, you know, the management. Yeah. I really do think that's important. You're all on the same side, you know.
Good. Okay, let's move sectors. We've got Andrew. He's asking about Rightmove, and because they had a bit of a shocker last week. They're the property portal in the UK, and they said that their top line was only going to continue growing at sort of like high single digits if they invested in that business, a shed load of extra money on AI, and therefore their profits got totally cratered in their forecast. How did you sort of like interpret that and what it means elsewhere for other sort of like portals or even web, you know, sort of comparison price websites?
Well, I read it pre-8 a.m. and I certainly didn't expect the share price to drop. I think it dropped 25% in the first hour, didn't it?
Yeah.
Although it did recoup some of it, but it hasn't generally bounced. It's had a almost vertical fall from £8.20 down to £5.69, which for a large cap is a hell of a move. So the way I interpreted it, it was dripping with tech speak about AI, and I thought, this is all very well, all this wonderful upside they're going to get from AI. But then they gave for the first time guidance for next financial year, and it showed a negligible increase in profitability. So the message it sent to me was, right, we're going to have to spend heavily on AI to sort of run to stand still. That was my take on it. And when you're it was on a PE in the nearly 30 not long ago. I see it's come down to 20 already. So this stock has already derated a lot. And I mean, you can cover the AI side of it, Paul, because I know some people, I think, including you, are saying, look, these marketplace type websites could be completely disintermediated by Gemini. Yeah. Yeah. So do you want to take up that point, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that I'm very cautious on all of these portals type, internet sort of website stuff, plus the price comparison websites and anything that is like a publisher as well, digital publisher. I think they're absolutely going to get annihilated ultimately by generative AI because people are moving just straight on to ChatGPT. And basically my strategy is a ChatGPT or AI first strategy. Whenever I have a problem and I sort it out, I just go straight there. And it tells me the actual, you know, the results. And if I've got, you know, questions to answer. And I know, I actually think Rightmove is probably the most defensive of all of them because it's got such a big library of properties on there. And it sells into, you know, sort of estate agents. But let's just say, for instance, just argument's sake, that the actual, the estate agents decided to make all of their videos and their, you know, listings available to the actual AI engines. Yeah. If they ever decided to do that, then the AI engines would not need to use, you know, to have a citation of Rightmove. And certainly the blue links will disappear anyway, which gives them a massive amount of traffic. So I think this is just as a matter of when, not if, we see this huge disintermediation. And I think it will happen faster to the price comparison websites. Any of the publishers, I mean, I just for reach, okay, I know they're big, you know, they own the Daily Mirror and the Express or whatever it is, those newspapers. Yeah. Digital side, which is working well. I mean, just give you an indication. I went to a major, you know, sort of newspaper just about 3 or 4 months ago, and they said they saw the traffic from Google, the blue links, down 70%. Okay.
Wow-y.
So what that means is that there's going to be less eyeballs on all of these because unless you're going to be top of the citations about, you know, when it comes to internet discovery rather than internet search, you are going to really struggle. And as I say, I think Rightmove's in the strongest place of all of them. So if I was going to choose, I'd go there, but I wouldn't go anywhere near Future Group. I wouldn't go anywhere near Reach. I wouldn't go anywhere. It's just a big auto trader's another one, which is going to get eventually hit. So, hey, I could be too negative, but I think people's behavior is going to really change over the next 3 to 5 years, because mine already has.
Yeah, no, that is very interesting. And my just additional thought on that is that even if this consumer behavior doesn't change to that extent, I think investor fear that it might change is already derating these shares.
Yes.
And we've seen, you mentioned Auto Trader, that's come off a lot in sympathy with the Rightmove thing, and also Baltic Classified, which is obviously I think it's the kind of equivalent of Auto Trader in the Baltic states. I don't think you can justify the valuations on either of those two, so I definitely wouldn't be long of any of these types of shares, just because I think their perception is that they're going to derate, whether the earnings do fall or not is almost by the by, isn't it? So we've got to be so careful at the moment, haven't we?
Yeah, you raise a brilliant point. Perception is 9/10 the law, isn't it? Because it will reduce the multiple that the city is prepared to put on it.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, again, on with Blue Links and whatnot. I mean, I'm just a basic user of the computer, really. And I mean, I don't use the Blue Links at all. The AI summary thing that pops up on Google usually gives me the answer I need. You know, I don't even, I don't scroll down to any of those links.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll give you an indication, right? I mean, I know we're speaking to Alamask tomorrow, okay? Me and you are, yeah? I think it's about 10 o'clock for the CEO and the FD.
Yes.
And what I've done already, okay, I just put straight into ChatGPT and just asked it to write a 6-page Word report on the company with all the different, like, you know, what its USPs are, what it does, what its valuation merit metrics versus the gut. And it just comes back, and it's within about 5 minutes. It's absolutely fabulous.
Oh,
and I mean, if I did the same with a house, isn't it? You know, I said, okay, we're around to live. I'm looking for a new house, 3-bedroom house within, you know, £500,000. Give us what's available. I bet it would come back with fantastic. But anyway, the power of this thing is changing people. It really is changing the productivity.
Yeah, it's funny because some of the most the people who've, you know, I get messages all the time from all the subscribers and things. Some of them, the ones who've been most adamant about AI, seem to be IT professionals. You know, one guy one of my subscribers is a very senior IT director at a big company. And he says, oh, I just use Gemini to sort out all my travel arrangements and whatnot. Yeah. But I don't know whether ordinary, less IT literate people will definitely do that. So maybe it's a little bit of a niche thing at the moment. But so it's how fast that transition happens, isn't it?
Yeah, it won't take long. When it saves you like 2 hours, then you'll do it quick. Okay, let's move on. We've got the last company we spoke to over the last 7 days was Light Science Technology. We had a fascinating chat to the CEO there, Simon Deacon, who gave us another hour. And basically for everybody, this is a sort of like, and he'll hate me to say it, this is a mini conglomerate, but it's a group of three businesses that are largely independent. They've got a contract electronics manufacturing, which is the biggest sales part of the business. They then got a fast-growing ad tech business that helps, it sells all its sensors and its systems to growers who then grow, you know, sort of plants and stuff.
Vertical farming, isn't it?
Yeah. And then they've got this passive fire protection that I said before, which was wrong, that it was basically it was a replacement for the cladding. It isn't actually for building cladding. You have to actually legislation. You have to take the cladding off. And then what this does, it basically it helps to improve the fire protection of a building by injecting this material into the cavity in the wall. Anyway, what was your view on the actual business?
Well, I was pleased to spend a time, an hour rather, talking to Simon, who was very polite, but he was, I think, slightly miffed by some of our previous comments on it. And I think we probably should apologise for the fact that we were not really properly researched on the products. So, well, we are now, and the cladding system, InjectoClad, I think it's called, isn't it?
That's correct.
It does sound interesting, but I think you... And it's approved, and it has a big pipeline of things they've quoted for. But I should probably let you follow up the point where you grilled him quite hard on what the market size is. And I think we came to the conclusion that really it's a bit niche. But do you want to expand on that, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, basically what it does, as I say, it's this material that's been around for some time, and you put it through in, where you have a wall and you have a cavity in it. This, you can inject this material at each floor of a high-rise building that then helps prevent fires. It doesn't stop fires because it gives you like a two-hour time to get the building or to get the building under control. It won't stop the raging fire, but it's so what it means is that there are specific circumstances where this is very useful to have and could save lives. But I think the vast majority of the actual market in cladding, which is a, you know, £35-36 billion business, then I don't think that applies. This material does, but what it means is that when somebody takes off cladding, it gives them the decision point about what they want to do in terms of access to putting this material in the actual cavity. I mean, just to give you an indication, we asked him about how much, you know, what sales, how big he wants this business to get to, this particular division. And he currently does about $1 million, I think. And he was talking about somewhere between 15 to 20 million in the next 3 to 5 years. And that may involve some M&A as well. So we're not talking billions for this type of material.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly.
Paul, we've just lost you. Sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. We were just Paul has just stalled, or it may be me. I don't know. I hope it isn't me. No, I think it's Paul. Actually, is he back now? We'll just wait a second. He's midstream. It must be his connection. We'll give it a couple of seconds. Ah, here he comes.
I lost you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, for some reason, I think your internet went down in Malta.
No, I think it's working fine. I think it was something at StreamYard.
Okay, yeah, no, maybe it was. Apologies for that. Yeah. If it was, yeah, you were midstream about the injector clad.
Yeah, so the injector clad we think is an interesting but quite niche business. So that was the first point, and then the ag tech business. He seems to think. Could get to 20 million a year. I mean, it's tiny at the moment. I think they did win that £500,000 contract with Nottingham Uni, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then finally, the contract electronics business, they want to get to 10 or 15 million. So all being well, this could get from revenues of about 10 million up to revenues of about 50 million. But those are quite challenging, and it would be worth significantly more than the current market price. I think maybe the share price has got a bit ahead of itself at the moment. I do respect Simon a lot because he founded this business 29 years ago. And the fact that he still owns, I think, about a third of the equity, well, that tells you a lot. That means that he's generally run the business profitably over those years. Otherwise, he would have been diluted down to nothing. So the fact that he's holds 30% personally, I found him very straightforward. Obviously very experienced, gave us clear, honest, I think, answers to the questions we asked him. I think it's quite good. I'm not going to rush out and buy any at the moment, personally. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I think you're more positive about it than I, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, really? Okay.
It isn't just something I would buy. I mean, I can see why some smart investors, I think Lawrence Hulse has got a big, about 13% of the shares. But frankly, I think it's got two three divisions together. For me to invest, I think it just needs to sharpen up and concentrate on what it wants to do and sell off. But obviously, ag tech and the cladding business or the injector clad are too small to do that. But if he could unbundle it and concentrate on what he wanted to, then that would be more interesting to me. But, you know, it's got potential, and I really hope he proves me wrong, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think it could be one of those businesses where the emphasis changes. It's like, I think when it floated, it was originally really floated as, oh, it's an ag tech growth company. And by the way, we've got these couple of other bits. Well, it seems to have changed this year to more about, oh, we think the injector clad side of it is the important bit. And that was Lawrence did say when I spoke to him, and I think he might have said the same to you, that the only part of the group he's really interested in is the injector clad. So it's quite interesting. So you only need one of these activities to really take off, and then the other bits can kind of just sit on the back burner. I don't know. I think the market cap's about 17, 18 million, which I think for where it's currently at, that to me is fully priced. I don't see enough upside from that price in the next year, for example. However, if you do get a string of announcements, you know, RNSs, oh, we've won this or that. And he said some of their, I think they've done 20 buildings so far with the injector clad. He said some of those customers, it was like a trial, really. Mm. And they've got loads of other properties. Yeah. And, you could get into that lovely thing where you get a string of contract win announcements and the market could take it a lot higher. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I could. Okay, let's move sectors. We've got Rebecca. She's asking about Avon Technologies. Did they come out with some trading update or results today? She says, have they been upgraded? But anyway, for everybody, these guys do rebreathers and defense or sort of soldier helmets. And they also do these masks for first responders, for the emergency services, and also for, you know, the army and their armed forces and stuff. Anyway, the shares have done brilliantly over the last 2 or 3 years, not surprisingly, as money has gone into the defence. What was your take on it?
I thought these results looked excellent, I have to say. I think it's called Avon Technologies now, A-V-O-N. Now, Richard Crowe has been talking about the turnaround here. He's makes most of his money really identifying turnarounds and bowls, of course, on the charts. He's popularized that concept. Both, you know, he's really, really good at it. And it's looking increasingly like he was right on this one. I mean, I tend to hang back and wait for the numbers to come in because I'm not really that good at predicting the future. Mm. So, but the numbers are now really working for me. I looked at this pre-8 a.m. and I thought, this is good. So we've upped it a notch from amber to amber green. It's performing well. It's not cheap, even after these. Yeah, earnings per share was up 31%. This is the September 25 results. Balance sheet's okay, bit of debt, but not a problem. In line to meet or beat our key targets in the new financial year, it says. It's ahead of its targets that were set for 2027. I think it looks really good, I've got to say. A slight downside risk on this, well, not slight, but the main worry thing I worry about is to what extent these are big, lumpy, one-off, high concentration contracts. That looks fine for the time being because the order book's up. So, yeah, it's cooking on gas at the moment, but you only have to look at the long-term share price to see what can go wrong when the orders dry up. Yeah. So. But no, well done to the Bulls. They called this one right for sure. Yeah, very nice figures.
Yeah, I think also it could well be taken out by an American defense company because it's sort of like expertise in a niche area that it probably needs greater scale and part of a bigger group to have that sort of resilience when they go ups and down cycles and stuff. But
yeah, anyway. I think this was a new CEO about two and a half years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a guy, Jez Scaly, I think, from, was it GKN, I think he came from.
Seems to have done a really good job. So hats off to Avon and its investors. Yeah.
Okay, we've got a quick question from Ben Sharman says, do you think the broadcast arm of ITV will finally be sold? So I think they didn't get approached from Sky.
Yeah, they did. And ITV's been, you know, bid approaches almost ongoing. But the interesting aspect of its RNS that ITV put out was it confirmed, yes, we're in talks to sell the media and entertainment division. They named the buyer, which I think was Sky, but was it Broadcom? Or no, it's the owner of Comcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, the owner of Sky. And they gave the price. They said for $1.6 billion. Well, that's a huge, that's more than half the market cap. So I think some of the parts on ITV is still well above the current share price, in my opinion. And I think there's a reasonably good chance this deal might go ahead, actually.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's almost certain to go ahead as long as the competition authorities allow it. That's the only take on it. I think both management teams want it. I could see that getting stuck in competition though for some time because it's all politics, isn't it?
That's a good point. Honest. Yeah, and also, of course, you always talk about ITV as this terrestrial broadcaster, but actually, it's got strong and it's got big and rising digital revenues. So I suppose the question we might like to ask them is how will it affect this ITV Studios business, given that it makes a lot of programs for ITVs?
Yeah.
Could it damage the studios business if, you know, maybe they'd have a relationship agreement for X number of years where it continues buying programs from studios? So that's the unknown in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move sectors to food distribution. We've got I9380 is asking about Kitwave. Basically, the thing is, it's a bit like a mini Booker. It does sort of like, it gives, you know, sort of ice creams and tobacco. It supplies them into convenience stores and also into food service companies and restaurants and stuff around the UK. Bought a big business Creed, I believe, in the southwest that is coming on stream. But the shares have just collapsed, actually.
We've really dropped, haven't they? Yeah. The last time we looked at it was 5th of November, a full year trading update for the October year end. That was it. In line with market expectations. Creed, yeah, there we are. Integration ahead of schedule. Balance sheet's a little weak, but not alarmingly so. 2.3 times EBITDA debt. So I'd like to see it pay some of the debt down. No clear outlook guidance, really, that maybe that's why the shares have struggled. I think it's good value. Have a look at it. You've got a nice yield as well. Some sector headwinds, one of my teams put here. I'm not sure what they mean by that. But, I think it's quite attractive value now, Kitwave, for kind of, you know, a relatively boring value type share, I think. Boring can be perfectly satisfactory, can't it?
You sold that to me there, Paul. But you're right. I mean, it trades at about, I've got 6.6 times PE, just over four times EBITDA. I'm with you. I mean, if I was saying anything, this sector is under consolidation, and do not be surprised, because this is okay. It's not in the top 10, but it's just outside the top 10. Somebody will buy this, I'm sure, any time, unless they've got a real problem with their earnings, which I don't believe. I mean, they make 5% EBIT margins, which seems about right, to be perfectly honest, for this type of business.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I can't remember if the founder sold out. I can't see the founder on the shareholder list, so maybe he's gone now. I'm not sure. But it was run by a guy, wasn't it, who set it up and built it for decades.
Yeah.
It's done lots of sort of in geographic infill type acquisitions. I've got a forward PE of 8 on ShareScope and forecast yield 5.6%. But slightly over indebted balance sheet is a little bit of a downside element. But yeah, I think for value investors, this one's worth a look, I'd say.
Okay, well, let's go to, we've got Peter who's asking about Volex, which obviously came out with a great, is it trading update or results today? Anyway, the shares are up 12%. These guys do sort of like electric cabling for EVs and also for data centers, and those are really, really doing well. I think it's offset by some contraction in healthcare and in sort of consumer electronics, but they've moved up market. Anyway, what's your latest view? The shares have really bounced well.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're up as much as they are today, up 13%. When I read the figures pre-market open today, I thought, okay, fair enough, that's not bad. They're in line with expectations. It was H1 results. EPS was up 30%, though, so that's very good. But I think they're saying H2 will be similar to H1. I think you're right. You've hit the nail on the head where you said, I think the market reacted so positively today to Volex figures because of the data centers side. That's showing really seriously good growth, which, as you say, they always seem to nicely balance off its different verticals. It's in four or five different industries, and one will be up, one will be down, and it nicely balances. Mm. Maybe the shares are now being re-rated to be a sort of picks and shovels AI type and infrastructure provider. You know, so this could, hopefully the bulls will be thinking this is a permanent re-rating up to sort of a PE of 15, 16, whereas in the past it's only been on a PE of about 12.
Yeah.
So we do like it, but we've moderated a little. We were green when it was much, much cheaper. We've now pulled it down a notch to to ambergreen, which is four out of five. So we like it, but you know, you have to get to a point where you think, well, the price is up with the events. So I'd say we're kind of in that territory now with Rolex, but it's been a great success. It defied the critics in tough macro. It's always performed well. So Nat Rothschild is has shown, I think, demonstrated with this that he's not just a pretty face. Or a billionaire playboy, you know, he can run a business, which is great.
Yeah, I think also what the investors or the city were positive about was that he decided now to be the CEO, and they've put a non-exec chairman in. And the reason why that sort of like could help this investor sentiment is that it removes any doubt in terms of corporate governance, because it could have been perceived previously as a Nat Rothschild show, a Nat Rothschild company. And now they've got a bit of sort of like, you know, official anyway, that Nat reports to this new chairman. Then it just gives that semblance that actually it meets all of those codes, because some of the funds won't invest in it if he's just an exec chairman, simply because of the code, you know.
So it's more a box ticking thing than in terms of anything actually changing in reality, isn't it? But you could be right, Paul. But lovely to see it doing so well, I think.
Okay, good. Well, we've got another one. We got Dan. He's asking about Domino's Pizza, which hasn't been cooking of late, unfortunately, but I think they've been struggling a bit. What's your sort of view? You used to have a really fabulous name in the UK. What's your view on Domino's?
I think it looks really cheap. The shares do. You do have to adjust that low PE, though, for the fact that it's got a horrible balance sheet. Some idiot decided to gear it up a few years ago to enhance shareholder returns. You're getting a 5.8% yield. Mm. You're on a forward PE of 10. Now, so it does look cheap, but obviously weight loss drugs could be a headwind for food delivery companies. And it'll be interesting to see the take-up. Actually, as we've got a few thousand people watching these, let's ask the readers, have you tried its new products? So it's got two new sub-brands. Chick 'n Dip is one, and something to do with curries is the other one. So tell us if you've tried these new products from Domino's. Are they any good?
Yeah.
Because if they are, that could be inject some more growth into it, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's reached a plateau in the UK. The competition is pretty tough. It's got like 1,400 stores and sites. It's still well thought of, but it's not growing volume. It's just growing price. Mm-hmm. And that says to me, we're getting to the end of this business model. It has been mooted that it's going to buy that Domino's Poland, isn't there, at some point to get some growth. But I personally think, you know, yes, it's cheap at 10 times PE, but that's what I've expected to see an ex-growth franchise business, to be honest. But
yes, and of course, they don't own the brand, do they? They license it from the US. I'd like to know what the terms are of that agreement, but I'm not sure if they disclose that. So, but I hear what you're saying completely, Paul, and I agree with all of that. But you see, these cash-generative mature businesses on very modest valuations can be a nice sort of starting point. If a new or an updated growth strategy is implemented, you then potentially have all that upside in for nothing, really. I'll be interested. We'll have to mystery shop. We'll have to mystery dine the new product, the new products.
Okay, we've got a last question, Lorenzo. Is any consumer defensive plays that you would sort of like hang your hat on at all, or say which are consumer cheap and good value? I've got a couple, I must admit.
Well, yours, well, I think.
Okay, well, one I'd say which is a bit racy but has come down is Warpaint. I think that was very good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm in that.
Consumer, it's been growing well. And I can't remember what the PE when I last looked at it, but I think it was sort
about
of like
10.
Low. Yeah, 10, 11. And, you know, the management team know what they're doing. They still have a lot of shares. So I would certainly have a look at that. But having said that, you know, just be wary that Elf Beauty in the States now came out with a shocking trading update last week or two weeks ago. So this whole cosmetic sector is definitely turbulent, to say the least, at the moment.
Yeah.
But Warpaint, any thoughts on any others for you?
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards experiences rather than products. So I still like Hollywood Bowl. I think that's good value. I do like XP Factory as well, mainly, although it doesn't look particularly exciting, as a bolt-on acquisition for larger pub groups, it would be an absolute no-brainer because they could add millions to the bottom line just by putting its drink buying power onto their existing buying team. So I think XP Factory, and the CEO couldn't have made it clearer in the last webinar that XP Factory did, that, you know, people are looking at them as an acquisition target. Card Factory, I think, is dirt cheap, but it always is. Consumer Defensive, see, we were asked, weren't we? I can't think of anything off the top of my head, really, Paul. No, I don't tend to buy supermarkets. I'm worried about the business rates and the equal pay legal side, so I'm keeping away from those. Also, unrelated, something I did buy today, which one of the companies we spoke to recently, PCI Pal.
Oh, right. Okay. This is a secure payment software company that goes into contact centers.
Well, you and I had a very interesting call with the CEO, James, something or other, quite a while ago. And I just picked up a small starter position because it ticked a lot of the boxes I like. Rapid ARR growth. Well, niche, very strong growth, and the shares seem completely overlooked. PCIP is the ticker. Yeah. Well, anyway, it held a CMD, Capital Markets Day, yesterday, and the broker put out a supportive note. And they popped about 10% yesterday, and there was I think the broker said there was a lot of interest. It was well attended, the CMD was. They had this Sicurio legal patent action that kind of took 2 or 3 years of management time out of the business, which is now they're fully back on into growth. And they said they had a particularly strong Q1 as well. That was RNS. I think this is looking an interesting opportunity. It's more your sort of thing than mine, but my antennae were just twitching on this, and I've loaded up from a entry position to a full size position now. So I think it's good.
Yeah, when we spoke to James Barham, the CEO, he was really switched on, and he was a man on a mission to.
Yes.
I think he wants to double his turnover from around about 24 million to about 50 million over the next 3 to 5 years. The only doubt I have, I mean, I can see the operating leverage. The only doubt I have is that they need to do it more out the box software because they've got quite a heavy R&D software engineering team. And if they can reduce it such that somebody can implement it in their contact centers within a month, then it means that they can take out a shed load of cost and therefore get really attractive EBITDA margins. I mean, the margins they currently make are only 4% on a £24 million turnover business. If they can get to 50 million and to make it more out of the box, which is what he wants to do, okay, so he absolutely wants to go on that path, then they'll make 25% EBITDA margins. And then you see this goes basically to a 3x sales or ARR, 3x 50 mil, these 150 million compared to a market cap of less than 40. So you could easily see this one getting to nearly £2.
I mean, I've kind of informally in my head targeted a doubler. I've bought around 50p or just above today, and I've kind of in the back of my mind think this could be a quid without making any assumptions at all, really, just looking at rolling it forward a year or two. So I think it is rather illiquid. It's not easy to buy stock, but I'm hearing a lot of my sort of shrewd investor friends have been in this for a while and they were, I think some of them were getting a bit stale bulls, but I think interest in it is now returning because it's quite a nice under the radar fast growth company, and I think they're heading for this rule of 40 thing as well. I believe that's sort of in the line of sight over the next year or two. So quite an interesting little one, PCI Pal. Just thought I'd jump.
Yeah, that good.
Yeah,
brilliant. Okay, well, thanks everyone for your questions. We've been going now for just over 75 minutes. So big thanks again to Paul, and look forward in chatting next week. It'll be on Thursday at 2 o'clock because the Mello is the Mello conference on the Tuesday and the Wednesday. I'm not actually there this week, but I know you are. So it'll be 2 o'clock on Thursday.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm looking forward to seeing everyone at Mello as well. It should be fun. I'll be giving out free Paulie Pilot Substack orange pens.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. We love those. Okay, well, thanks again, guys, and see you next week.
Yeah, thanks everyone. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.